Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
At 8:14 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Vicky Salemi, a career expert, about what the job market's like for new college graduates and how to get your resume in front of the right people and how to get hired and so forth. Keep your job. Somebody else texted in a question that we'll get to about, can you please ask about resumes for older workers? We'll talk about that as well. First of all, good morning, Vicky. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm great. It's always great to be back. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to talk to you. But let me just ask you a question. Can you imagine, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just asking. I'm doing a survey here, okay? Eating a piping hot bowl of mac and cheese outside in the heat and humidity of summer?
I cannot imagine that. No.
I can't.
Can you?
Gumbo no. Either. No, or soup. It doesn't seem like it. But anyway, let's talk about what's going on with the workforce now and with the market. Is it post-COVID? Is it still an employee's market? Is it an employer's market? Tell me what's changed.
Yeah, you know, the pendulum continues to switch. So it's important for job seekers to try to, I don't want to say block out the noise, but focus on their search because it all depends. Some industries are hiring, others are on freezes, hiring freezes. So it just all depends on, you know, the area of the country as well. So it's really important for people to stay positive if you're looking for a new job.
I was at a function last night and somebody was giving a speech and they were talking about COVID and actually about, you know, what it was like when everything shut down and recovering from it and so forth. And it really slapped me in the face because I kind of forgot about it because I'm kind of back to where I was. I don't know that I've had any substantial changes or not, but how much did COVID change? I mean, that was a huge thing the United States and the world went through, and I didn't really, again, remember to realize it until this came up last night in the speech I was hearing. But how much did that change forever the job market, or did it forever change the job market?
It changed so much, and I'm glad that you brought this up because I think we sometimes collectively block it out. Like, okay, life seems back to normal now. But not only in terms of the job market, Tommy, but also how and where we work. So hybrid working models are very prevalent right now, as well as remote work. And especially for Gen Z workers, they only know having options. For people like you and I, like back in the day, there was only one option. That was where the employer was based. So it's definitely changed. And then with the job market, that changes because it opens up job seekers to casting. They're able to cast a wider net and have more options. And similarly, it helps employers as well because they're not necessarily limited to a specific skill set in a specific area. They can perhaps recruit more broadly across the country or even globally for remote workers.
We have done so much on artificial intelligence. I got to ask you, how has that impacted the hiring industry? Is that part and parcel of it now, Vicky?
It's part of it, but I should say it's been part of it. So I think we're just talking about it more. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I worked in recruiting, it was, you know, the applicant tracking system on the other side of the screen. When you submit a resume, the recruiter filters and the system can automatically know which resumes may be a fit. And so it is part of the fabric, I think, of the recruiting process, and it's becoming more talked about. It's becoming more high tech now and more sophisticated. But it's been part of the system for a while.
So I'm looking at a book here that a professor from New York University wrote, The Algorithm, How AI Decides Who Gets Hired, Monitored, Promoted, and Fired, and Why We Need to Fight Back Now. Is there anything in the world you can do? And how does that, what does that look like? AI deciding who gets hired or maybe promoted or fired? Do you know?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this because I really want to check out that book. It sounds so interesting. Mm-hmm. So regarding hiring, it's important for people to, when they're applying to a job, look at their resume and compare it to the job description. You always need your resume to be 100% accurate and honest, factual. However, you want to use keywords that the job description is using, if it's appropriate and, again, accurate, so that AI can pick up your resume when AI, you know, does the search. Regarding promotions and firings, I think nothing can really replace your soft skills and your ability to do your job and have that relationship with your boss and have an amazing work ethic and be an outstanding employee, and your performance should speak volumes. So I haven't really heard where AI has made an impact more in terms of promotions and firings, as I know the emphasis is more on the hiring piece.
Did you know our Pelican team, as did our other NBA team, take part in the NBA draft? And we were talking yesterday, and we'll talk for the audience. I'll tell them we'll talk about it next half hour as well, about some players that they have a look test and they have an analytic test where analytically they're getting it done, but other players just look like they can get it done. And then that's a question, I guess, of coaching them up. In a way, it seems like the same kind of thing applies in a workplace, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, when you're interviewing for a job, you want to show the employer that you have the ability to step up. And that's the thing. Some people only pursue jobs that they've already mastered. But the key is to level up and show and demonstrate that the look test to your employer that you have the ability. If they can provide you with the resources, you can learn new skills and you can literally step up to the plate. Baseball analogy, not exactly basketball, but you know what I mean.
Well, let me take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what words to avoid on your resume, what words to include on your resume, and also does it matter on how old you are? And when it comes to people that are 50 losing their jobs, what do they do where they're supposed to go? Vicky Salemi, our guest, a career expert. If you have any questions or comments, text them in, please, to 504-260-1870-820. Traffic now, WWL. 25, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Vicky Salemi, career expert, about the hiring market and how to make sure that your resume doesn't get tossed aside and that maybe ensuring a way that it gets looked at. Vicky, are there must-avoids and must-includes when it comes to this?
Yes, with your resume, I guess we'll start with the must-includes. Try to be as quantifiable as possible. Instead of saying you manage a team or you manage a budget, get specific with numbers. Mm-hmm. And again, tie it back to the job description in the order of the job description will have the most important responsibilities for the job to least important. So you can always flip the order and rearrange bullets on your resume to reflect descending order that mirrors the job description. For things you should avoid, avoid sounding too, I'm trying to look for the word, but like don't use words like ninja warrior or something that isn't like, that goes back, that doesn't really relate to the actual job or your skill set, but you can tie it back to their corporate culture. If you see they use certain words, you can put that in your executive summary at the top. But it's really important to also eliminate jargon and acronyms. So if your company uses acronyms all the time, someone reads your resume, they won't know, like, if you use abbreviations, they may not know what it means. If it's industry specific, you can include something like that so it shows you're a pro and you know what you're doing in the industry. But if it's company specific, I would spell it out literally so the person reading it knows what you're talking about.
Somebody texted in before you even came on, Vicky, about people that are older in the workforce, what they can do with their resumes. And I've seen this movie up in the air several times with George Clooney, and it's terrifying because you think, you know, if you're over 50 and people get fired, where do you go? What do? How do you start rebuilding? Somebody texted in asking about that. What would your advice to them be?
Yeah, be persistent. I have heard anecdotes from people over 50 that it takes longer to find a job than they did previously in their career. But companies are hiring, and like I said earlier, some companies are casting a wider net. So if you are looking for a job, think about outside the box. Maybe you start with a part-time job while you're looking for a full-time job. Leverage your skills, upskill. Really highlight your relationship-building skills because younger generations, Gen Z, millennials, may be more tech-savvy. I'm just making assumptions here, so please forgive me.
Right.
But if someone's a baby boomer or Gen X, they may be really solid in relationship-building skills. And for workplaces to thrive and be effective, they really need all generations represented.
So there's a story on Yahoo.com about the Boston Red Sox using AI and chatbots to conduct interviews for baseball operations people, and not one or two or three, but five candidates never got to talk to anybody in person. How common is that in the real world, and how do you do well to get through that, at least to talk to a real person?
Yeah. Well, as a Yankee fan, it's interesting that you mentioned the Red Sox. But anyway, it's
so you're glad about that.
Yeah, I'm not upset about that. But it's becoming more prevalent. And I should say, when I worked in recruiting, I had a list of standard questions. And during the first phone screen as a recruiter, you're building rapport, but it's slowly happening. And you're just like almost checking the boxes, like what's your salary requirement? And you're asking these specific questions. So that's not uncommon to hear that in the beginning of the interview process. What's key to stand out is prepare for it as if you're connecting with a person on the phone or in person, even though this is a chat box and you're talking to AI. And the thing is, all the information will be recorded and most likely saved in their tracking system. So you just prepare for it like you're ready to ace an interview with a real person. But the key is also proceeding to the next round. So hopefully you will at some point, hopefully need to actually speak to someone. And that's when you build the rapport, and also you're evaluating them as much as they're evaluating you.
Let me get this question real quick. If entering a new industry and as a job applicant, I do not have every skill in a job posting, maybe 80%, should I still send a resume? Thoughts?
Yes.
Okay. Because you never know who else is sending them in, right?
Exactly. And even if you're not a fit for that job, I did this in recruiting all the time. They weren't a spot on fit for that job. I said, ooh, but I know in 2 months I'm going to have an opening. Let me talk to them now. So it is a good idea to get your resume in the system because you don't know. And you shouldn't necessarily need to check all the boxes. 80% is solid. You'd be surprised how many people send when it's 10% a max. So already you're going to stand out because you're 80% there.
Let me clean this up, too, Vicki. I hate to break the bad news to you. It wasn't five candidates. It was one candidate that had to go through five rounds of AI interviews. But still, I don't think it bodes well for the Red Sox. Thank you, Vicki Salemi, career expert.
Thank you.
Go Yankees. Go Pelicans. We'll talk to Ali Cosell when we come back about that. And we'll continue the animal half hour talking to Jeff Dorson. He's the executive director of the Louisiana Humane Society about the problems that they have during the summertime. 8:31, call it. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 8:46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A Pelicans draft is in the books, and Ali Cosell joins us, our friend, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. Talk about last night's action. How you doing, Holly?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm all right. So I heard you on Sports Talk last night, and you were giving out some names, and I think the Pelicans picked one of the people you were talking about, right?
Right. So the Pelicans in the second round drafted Peavy, fifth-year senior out of Georgetown. And what's important to note, it seems like most of the players the Pelicans grabbed, and even in the trade with involving Jordan Poole and Sadiq Bey, they're all players that Troy Weaver has watched or been around a lot, especially this past season. So, yeah, Michael Peavy played in Georgetown, the same area right where Troy Weaver was working with the Washington Wizards. But he exploded on the scene last year. Kind of had a breakout year. And it kind of reminds you of Herb Jones, where he's known as a defender. He's about the same size, 2'6", 2'8". But he started shooting the ball a lot better in his final year. So the hope is that carries over the NBA. And if it does, Pelicans got a steal. And then later, once the draft was over, in the undrafted portion, I guess, of the night, where teams are grabbing anybody that's still left over, Pelicans grab a center out of Hunter Dickinson and already signed him to a two-way contract, another fifth-year guy, real legitimate size, right, 7'1". But the thing with him is his career kind of plateaued. He never seemed to improve upon once he was a sophomore in Michigan. So we'll see if he pans out to be anything.
I heard you talk about, you know, the reaction to the polarization of choices, and we talked about that yesterday. But then I heard you last night talking about, after you slept on it, you thought about it a little bit differently. Talk about Joe Dumars' strategy in this Pelicans team as opposed to before and what maybe could happen.
Yeah, so honestly, Tommy, they're just incredibly aggressive as to compared with David Griffin. He was more measured, right? And it seemed like he had boundaries. So if a player, for instance, in the draft or via trade, he felt was one that he liked and coveted, he wouldn't go and you know, basically trade away the farm to get him, right? Mm-hmm. Seems like that's not the case with Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver. There's a player they like, they're going to go after him. And nothing could have shown that as a better example than how they went and got Derek Queen. Everybody's got their favorites, and then the Pelicans walked away with, I want to say, two of their favorite three draft picks once you got past Cooper Flagg and Dylan Harper. So there's something to be said about chasing your guy. Sometimes it works, right? It worked for Phoenix Suns back in 2018. They moved up six spots in the first round to nab Mikal Bridges from the Philadelphia 76ers, and they trade away a first-round pick unprotected. So it worked out for them, but that's not always the case. So now there's a lot of pressure, right? If the Pelicans are bad, Tommy, next year, and they don't have that first-round pick, that means a bad season. You're not going to get a chance to improve upon that team and what's supposed to be a good draft. So Derek Queen, Jeremiah Pierce, this whole crew coming in, that trade for Jordan Poole, this all has to work out for this new regime.
You know, I'm a casual fan, Ollie, but listening yesterday and reading all this stuff, I'm thinking that with Joe Dumars, at least he picked a direction. It's like we're lost in a forest, right? We're in a forest of mediocrity. At least he picked a direction and he's walking. Is it the right direction? I don't know. We'll find out. He's responsible for it either way, but at least it's not a step forward, step back, step forward, step back, step forward.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Forward step back.
Now, if my understanding is they have belief right in Zion Williamson, he's going to have to be pivotal. He's going to have to play like a top 20 player. But they believe that Jordan Poole, they'll be able to get the best out of him. So he'll resemble more of the player you saw in his last 2 years with the Warriors than what you saw the product in Washington. Sadiq Bey, great reserve. He looked like he had a promising upward trajectory under Troy Weaver's in Detroit. But again, that ACL injury knocked him out last year. Can he bounce back? So there's a lot of question marks, but this, like I said, this regime, you're right. They have a vision. They're following through with it. You don't know how many times I heard during the David Griffin era where they liked a certain player, and guess what? That player panned out, whether it was in the draft or via trade. And the thing was, they just never really went out and swung hard, right? They made some trades, but they never went all out for a player. Even that DeJounte Murray trade, if you think back to right when it happened, a lot of people said at the time, the Pelicans won, they fleeced the Hawks because they didn't give up that much. Right? In hindsight, now people are saying differently, but that was kind of the sentiment of the Griffin era, right? You just didn't swing big and hard for the guys you really wanted. It's the opposite, it seems like now.
Very quickly, only got a couple of seconds left. Ollie, are they done, or do they make more roster moves, the Pelicans?
There's going to be definitely more roster moves, I'm hearing. It's probably not going to be seismic. It sounds like they're going to keep, for instance, Trey Murphy and Herb Jones, but everybody else, like a Jose Alvarado, Jordan Hawkins, they could be on the move.
Thank you. Appreciate your time as always. Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. We're going to take a break, come back to talk to Jeff Dorson, executive director of the Humane Society of Louisiana. They got some problems during the summertime. We'll talk about how we all can help. 8:51 traffic now. 8:55, 5 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, a brutally hot Friday, joined now by Jeff Dorson, executive director of the Louisiana Humane Society. I know the shelters in Louisiana always need help, especially in the summertime. How you doing, Jeff, and how stressed are y'all in the shelters?
Hey, Tommy, thanks for always thinking of the little animals that are sometimes forgotten, but you have a nice way of always remembering them a couple times a year on your show, so many thanks for that. Yes, you hit a good point that a lot of animal shelters have been in distress for several years. Once the pandemic lifted, people were going back to work, inflation set in, so every shelter in our state and rescue group is overwhelmed with too many intakes and not enough adoptions or transports. So I'm glad you're mentioning this. There's a need. So I'll review with you some common ways people can help and some uncommon.
Please.
Common is, of course, go ahead. The main one is go ahead, reach out and see what the needs of your local shelter are. Animals need to be socialized, walked, bathed, interacted with. That's a typical one. An untypical one would be consider becoming a wildlife rehabber. I know that seems like a strange thing because people think somehow all these wonderful creatures, somehow you simply call wildlife and fisheries and the raccoon is picked up and taken care of. And that's not how it works. Individuals are tasked with the responsibility of getting licensed and then paying for all costs out of their own pocket. and we hardly have any rehabbers in our city, and none whatsoever for birds. Mm-hmm. So please consider, if that's of interest to you, contact us, and we'll let you know how you can become a licensed rehabber.
So there's an animal that's injured or something, or just been a nuisance or captured, or what are they doing exactly? I'm confused, Jeff.
It's hard. So let's say we get calls of injured pelicans. A wing is broken or injured, and it's up to us and other groups to somehow send a volunteer with heavy gloves, capture it so it's not hurt, take it, put it in a cage, and then we have to drive all the way to LSU. It's one of the few places that will take injured wildlife. We have to get more people involved so that we don't have to travel so far. So it's a very strange system that hasn't been developed very well. But I know you probably want to talk about companion animals, but we can get back to that as well.
All right, let's just a little bit more about this rehab. What's involved in training, a lot or not?
It is, and it's an ongoing specialty where you have to go to Wildlife and Fisheries. We helped pass a bill 2 years ago to take an online course. So you're going to have to study for it and be prepared to take in injured animals into your home. The state doesn't provide all these wonderful wildlife sanctuaries like people think. It's out of your own back bedroom or garage. And you learn how to take care of, and they're different species. Some people just specialize in birds, others are mammals, others are, you know, raccoons or opossums, mm-hmm. what have you. So then you have to pay out of your own pocket medicine, food, and care.
Let me ask you real quick about volunteering at shelters, fostering animals, and adopting them.
Yep, there's a need for all three. So go ahead, call your local shelter or rescue group. There's a difference. Some rescue groups are just foster-based, and you can help by taking in one or two or considering adoptions, because adoptions are way down from previous years, Tommy. With inflation setting in, people don't have the money for food or vet care, so they want to relinquish their animals. We need others to step in to help bridge the gap. And transports are down. We used to transport animals to other parts of the country, and those are dwindling, so we're stuck with a surplus of animals down south.
So the website to go, what do you go to? If I look, just look up animal shelter in your area, how do people find out?
Yeah, go ahead. That's the way to start. Type in your city and parish and see what pops up, and then make your call. Do you have a certain skill? Are you good with accounting? Are you an attorney? All these skills can help your local groups strengthen their programs and services. Or just walk some dogs. Go ahead and spend some time socializing them. It all makes a difference.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. We'll take a break and come back. Talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.